Hey, everybody, we're back with another first-run bald movie. This time, we see, belatedly, the 2008 film Black Panther, directed by Ryan Coogler.
Mm-hmm.
Ironic, a Coogler directing a Panther movie.
Oh, Jesus. That's how we're going to start this review?
Why not?
Okay, sure.
Director of Fruitvale Station and Creed, starring Chadwick Boseman, Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, and Danai Gurira, among many, many others. What did you think of this film? Okay, wait, first, let me start up. Let me say something.
Oh, boy.
I had gotten tickets in advance for this film in Cincinnati, and then the only window to go visit my dad in Florida where my work and my son's school schedule lined up was this last weekend, which caused me to not be able to see it in Cincinnati. I planned on going to see it down in Florida, but every single show within like 30 miles of my father was sold out. Yeah. I went yesterday to see this film at a 3:45 showing on Monday that I thought would be easy. I got there a half hour early. It was sold out. Every showing of the film was sold out until 7:45.
Yeah.
I can't fucking believe it.
I thought about going to see this again tomorrow morning, or tomorrow morning, yesterday morning.
Yeah.
This showing was completely sold out. So, yeah, it seems like this is just crushing box office records.
It's the second highest.
Like, look out, Star Wars kind of thing.
It's the second highest movie gross, at least domestically, for Marvel since the first Avengers, which has been its high water mark. So it's making crazy bank.
Yeah.
What did you think about the film itself?
I thought this movie was a breath of fresh air for the Marvel universe, mm-hmm. cinematic universe. I am very, very tired of the formula that Marvel usually trots out, and especially the comedy of those movies.
Uh-huh.
They just keep hitting the same joke over and over again in most of these movies, and
right.
This movie felt very new and very refreshing to me.
Yeah, the especially Josh Whedon-y humor.
Yeah.
I agree with everything.
Because I fucking hated the humor. Like, Thor Ragnarok, uh-huh. I thought was kind of a shitty movie. Looking back on it now, the only thing that saved that movie for me was Jeff Goldblum.
Mm.
Everything else was just like, oh my God, really? We're going to do this again?
I actually find myself getting a little tired of the Marvel format as well. And I'm judging films on how far they push the barriers as far as like the fight sequences. What can they possibly do with the new origin story? How can they tightly interweave like all these films together? And this film I had high hopes for because I really thought Black Panther's debut in Captain America 3 was really amazing. I thought Chad Boswick was like, or Boseman rather, was really, really charismatic and amazing as him. And I liked the idea of this like, crazy, super advanced African state that's been in hiding, and like the fact that he's got a lot of unique hooks as a superhero. He's a king, you know. He's got all this advanced technology, but he's hidden away from the world. And I had high hopes for the film, and then I kept on hearing things like, "Oh, Kendrick Lamar saw an early copy of this film, and he decided to make a whole album for it." And then this weekend I saw that it was getting like 97% fresh in Rotten Tomatoes. And as I was watching the movie, the first third, I'm like, I'm not seeing it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I just like, it's fine. They're doing a lot of world building. And half of this is like, I don't know anything about Black Panther other than what I've seen in the films. And then Michael B. Jordan shows up as the Killmonger. And I thought from that point forward, the film, it was really amazing. He's the best supervillain since Magneto.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's almost not even close. Like,
yeah.
Magneto and Killmonger are, like, in a league of their own.
Yeah.
When it comes to Marvel.
And much like, you know, Magneto,
because
there's a lot
sympathetic.
Of...
Because they're sympathetic. Like, that's the thing about these villains. Like, if I can identify with what is driving a villain as opposed to, like, just maniacal rage or something, then I get a lot more invested in the villain as well.
Yeah.
And you know, they're obviously villains take things too far.
Right.
And villains are evil beyond a certain point. But
right.
They do so well with the motivations of the villain in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, having Michael B. Jordan portraying him as a very charismatic, interesting guy himself, and as a, I mean, I don't want to spoil too much of the movie because honestly, the identity of Killmonger is something they kind of play with and develop, and it's one of the things where, like, when he comes out kind of out of nowhere and establishes himself as the primary antagonist of the film, it's you know, I don't want to spoil those moments. So, but yeah, that's to me. The political questions that the movie asked, the discussions I've seen provoked around the internet, and the, like some of the stuff that's going on with like you know, black academia, if that's the correct term for this, where they're having disputes about like, Killmonger, is he actually the secret hero versus the film versus like, you know, I think that stuff is all super cool.
And that, those are things that I felt coming out of this movie. Like I was questioning where I stood on this whole thing.
Sure.
And, you know, this movie is largely not made for me necessarily. Right. It's made for, as I've heard it termed, the black diaspora, which is like all of the peoples of Africa spread across the globe.
Right.
So, like, I actually am glad that this was sort of a belated review because it gave me time to go and see. I really wanted to know, like, what are the black communities in America talking about? What are the black communities around the world talking about with this film? And I went online and I was sort of disappointed to see that, like, the big outlets like EW and Variety and, like, the people who do movie reviews professionally and are well known for it were all, like, having... They couldn't, I don't know if they couldn't find amongst their ranks a black journalist to go see this film, but it was all a bunch of fucking white guys reviewing this thing. And I'm like, you can't possibly get this in the way that someone else can.
Yeah.
And so, like, I went on Slash Film and I looked at Monique Jones's review. And she does, like, the definitive review, in my opinion. And RogerEbert.com actually had a really good one, too. From
The Ringer had a bunch, too. The Ringer has a lot of good articles.
I can't remember his first name. Henderson?
You got me.
Yeah. But he did a good review. Monique Jones does a great review of it and really taught me a lot about what to think about this movie.
Yeah. And it was interesting because I liked, you know, as a, you know, I was talking to my son about this film as we were pulling up to it and, you know, kind of like some of the big picture parts of this film. Like, this is the first black superhero movie. And, of course, Wesley Snipes comes in on Twitter and be like, everybody forgot about Blade, but I think it's...
Come on, man. It's not the same
It's not the same. Like, Blade is not a superhero in the sense that, like, Spider-Man is a superhero.
And also, Blade is not a black superhero in the sense that Black Panther is a black superhero.
Right.
Like, come on.
Like, explicitly black, you know.
The culture. We're not talking about the skin color here. We're talking about the understanding of the world.
Exactly. And I was telling him about, like, you know, how... Imagine if you grew up in a world where... You know, all the superheroes are black or Chinese or whatever. And, like, then Spider-Man is the first, like, white superhero. And now, like, he looks like you and he's from a background that you recognize. And the way he interacts with his family and his art and everything about his world is something that you can relate or aspire to. And, like, what a big deal that'd be. And then I got to the film, like, and, like, it's, like, 80% black families with their kids there. And I thought that was really, that's fucking cool. And that's why, like, representation in culture is important. And I also am gratified to see that the film is taking off financially.
Yeah. I will say that, like, as a movie, like, if you divorce it from any of the importance that it has, as a movie, it was like a 3 out of 4 stars for me. It was sort of formulaic in its villain and its goals. Like, I don't think it's like the most amazing plot of any movie ever.
Right.
But the way that it intertwines the plot with the messages that it's trying to convey and the understanding of that world.
Right.
To me, elevate it to like a really great movie.
Yeah, and I'll add on to that. I thought that a lot of the action scenes were kind of lackluster. They reminded me of like around Spider-Man 2-ish.
Okay.
Like, a lot of the CGI where, like, the Black Panther is swinging around on poles and, like, kicking stuff reminded me, like, of like, beat-for-beat, like, Doc Ock versus Spider-Man fights, which were very impressive for the day. Maybe missing it out, or maybe I've gotten so used to, like, Doctor Strange and fucking Guardians of the Galaxy, like just big over the top action scenes. Like the final action scene where they finally kind of pull out all the stops was very impressive. And I like the nightclub fight, and like there's a car chase in it that's I guess required in superhero films now. But it was upstaged by the own like the car chase in Captain America 3, in my opinion. But the art direction and the characterization and the acting between all the leads and the like the poignancy that the leads give, like you said, it's not. In fact, the Black Panther story is essentially Magneto versus the X-Men. Like that's like with a lot of the same like themes and a lot of the same like, you know, well, yeah, you got a point, but can you really kill everybody that? Because, like, you know, in Killmonger's world, you and I are up against the wall.
Sure.
With our brains blown out.
Yeah.
And maybe we deserve that.
Right. I felt the conflict within me. Like,
right.
I don't know that I feel like this guy shouldn't win.
Because that's
the sense of justice there.
Right.
Might be a little perverse.
But. Yeah. And that's the thing. I saw a lot of, like, I guess white fright at some of the reactions online and people like in Reddit, like, well, how can you be a spout? And I'm like, I want to talk about this concept of Afrofuturism that I did a lot of research on in the run up and immediately after this movie I saw. But essentially, like, you talk about the African diaspora, you know, how many movies have we seen where aliens with superior technology land and start rounding us up and abducting us and shoving us on ships for food or for slave purposes or whatever, and then humanity fights back and gets to destroy them. Like, Africans don't have to imagine that because that's actually what fucking happened. And I mean, I'm obviously, as a white person, I don't want to be put up the wall against the wall and have a vibranium bullet put through my skull. But like, in a heroic turn of that event, that's right. What would happen. Like,
yeah, that would be justice.
The amazing thing in the 21st century, as globally we're trying to tiptoe through that process so that nobody gets their brains blown out.
Yeah.
And it's tough, and it's a struggle all around. But like, to say that that's an invalid reaction or that's a little fucking extreme is pretty, I think, culturally and historically tone deaf.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I like Monique Jones's review so much is because she talks about the Black diaspora's identity problems and kind of how a lot of the anger and confusion and frustration stems from that.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, were removed from their culture, essentially, and just, you know, fragmented.
Yeah, like I know that I'm a German American. You know, you're Italian American.
Right.
If you want to go back, you can go back and visit the home country and get whatever connection out of that. If you're an African American, where the fuck did you come from?
Yeah,
like maybe 23andMe can like shed some light. And there was like, I was listening to a Larry Wiltmore podcast where he did a 23andMe, and he's like, 13% Irish. What the fuck? You know, like that's like, if you start peeling back, that's like, there's like, that's some crazy fucked up dark things that you're thinking about. And that's like this Afrofuturism concept is like, there's a lot of like themes of alienation and reclamation because, you know, you're alienated because you don't. Yeah, like the culture that you had was destroyed and eradicated systematically, and you can't really go back. So you're alienated and you want to reclaim that heritage, but it's not really there to reclaim. So you have to kind of like, I'm a white man trying to talk about all these concepts. I'm just trying.
I know. Like, I feel I don't want to define, like, the reason I point to the Black reviewers.
Right.
Is because I don't want to define the conversation. And the reason I was so fucking offended when I saw a bunch of white people reviewing these for this movie for big outlets is because they're defining the larger conversation, and that's not who should be defining it.
Right. So everything I'm saying, is stuff that I have cribbed from writers and intellectuals that have been thinking about this and living these experiences a lot longer than I have.
But that's why I liked it, is because it takes all those viewpoints that the different Black communities are feeling, like the African people who are still in Africa, I think feel somewhat differently about this than the African Americans do, right? Because they had things, you know, thrust upon them, but not in the exact same ways.
Right.
So they all feel a little bit differently. And I think this movie does a pretty good job, as I understand it, of combining all, of putting all of those feelings up on the screen
right.
and saying, where do we go from here?
Right. And
which
that's,
I think, is important.
That's the other thing that I've, as I've continued to kind of study, like, diversity in Hollywood and themes of that, is the how different, like, for example, you know, we made fun of the Great Wall with Matt Damon. And, like, Chinese mm-hmm. Americans and, like, most Asian Americans were kind of offended by yet another white savior complex and all this. But yeah. I was listening to this Whiting Wong's podcast with Dan Harmon and Jessica Gao, and it's all about, like, diversity in Hollywood. And they mentioned that, like, if you talk to Chinese people, they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? This was one of our directors with big Hollywood budget, big Hollywood money. And Matt fucking Damon came over and made a movie with us. It's awesome.
Huh.
Like,
okay.
like to them, that's a like some like a Hong Kong cinema has fucking arrived because yeah. we got, but it's like, but that's why it's so important to get a bunch of different perspectives, because perspective yeah. and empathy is the lens that allows you to actually kind of understand and slice up the world and make it manageable.
And that brings us to like discussions about exploitation
sure.
of the black communities. Like a lot of people are talking about, you know, how Disney's just cashing in
uh-huh.
on the you know, black communities and pulling money from their pockets,
yeah.
stuffing it in their own. I of the reviews I've read, none of the people who've seen this movie feel that way. They all feel like it's a triumph, not a cash grab.
Yeah, and I as a person that like identifies with leftist politics and spends a lot of time reading it, like I do think there's a streak of leftist politics that just cannot celebrate a win.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything, like even here is like, you know, this thing, it's like this Black Panther thing, which has become like this kind of moment, and it's an important moment, and it's big, and it's and I think it. I don't know if it represents a sea change or whatever, but it's a step in the direction of like how I would like the world to see how I'd like to see the world. But it's like people shitting on it, like, you know, well, it's just, again, it's corporations making money off black bodies.
I mean, if that's your opinion, what's your alternative to not do it?
Right. Which then you'd be shitty. Oh, another fucking all white cat. So,
right.
But I do think there's this movement on Twitter, the hashtag Disney Break Bread, where they're calling for like 25% of the profits of the movie to be redistributed to like urban
okay.
African-American school systems and stuff. I actually think that'd be a great idea. Like that is where the rubber meets the road. Like, yes, this is good. Yes, Disney did this thing. Yes, Marvel did this thing. Yes, they did it right.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is of all this money is going to go to a corporation. So it's like a feel good victory, and to make it an actual victory, maybe they should,
but it also,
maybe they should.
That also goes into our culture
yes.
as Americans, too.
Yes.
So even if all of the money is going into their pockets, the
right.
intangibles are also going back into the culture. So
sure.
I do think there's some benefit to it, even if, you know, no money comes from it. But yeah,
yeah.
I think that would be a cool thing to do for Disney.
Yeah, and they can fucking afford it.
Yeah.
So
they sure can.
I think it's a good thing for them to do. They can fucking afford it. Like, yes, you're right. These are all good things. Like, a crop of black superstars that are going to come out of this movie
yeah.
is, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you hope. That's what you want to see. Like, I would love to see these people go on to have, like, solo careers that are equally amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I do see that. There's people that I think if you see in culture and media, things don't go your way again and again and again. Sometimes when they do, it's kind of hard to be, like, 100% happy for it, because you still see, well, there's this problem, there's this problem, there's always going to be problems, and you need those people that are the perpetual gadflies, I guess, because that's how you stop, that's how you don't get complacent. Like, okay, here is a victory now,
yeah.
but you know, we're not at the top of the mountain, we're just halfway up. Let's keep marching.
You need to give yourself a second to celebrate.
But you do.
Though.
You
yeah.
should. You should. But don't you see that happens with us in Bald
it does,
Move
yeah.
too? Like we very rarely look back and see how far we come. It's more of like I don't know what that is. I don't know what that fucking it's not a false humility, but it's certainly that's got connotations of where, like, you know, you can't enjoy, you can't stay present in the moment and experience the joys, where it seems like it's very much easier to celebrate the struggle and the sufferings and all that, not to make my shitty podcast out to be
pride fucking with you.
Right.
No, it's, I think it's ambition and desire to succeed, stuff like that. But, the other thing is, I know you've already tuned out of this review, so you won't hear this, the people who need to fucking hear this. But if you are the person, and I've been this person, so I understand the mentality of it, but you need to get over this idea of this is just a movie and mm-hmm. we all need to divorce it from politics.
Yeah.
And let's just sit back, eat our popcorn, and enjoy it, because that is not this movie.
Yeah.
This movie is much bigger than that. And if that's your feeling, it's not even akin. I mean, it is exactly telling these people to sit down and shut up. And
that's
that is
happening.
Not cool.
Like, that's like, it's funny, the weekend this came out, there's like this controversy, Laura Ingraham, where she criticized LeBron James and a few of the other basketball players who were commenting on the gun violence in this country. And the language she used was recognizably the exact same language that was used against African Americans in the 50s and 60s to fucking go back and draw, like, you know, I don't need you opening your ignorant mouth and stepping out of line. And like, there is a lot of that that's like coming back and emboldened
for very obvious reasons.
And
think about the position you're in when you say, I don't want to be bothered with all that stuff.
You're in
the position of privilege here.
Right.
The people who aren't very much need to be bothered by this stuff because it's their everyday.
Right. Yeah, no. And I like I know it's so funny because as any minority to explain your situation to a privileged person and be told that, like, well, what are you whining about? Or that doesn't really matter.
I just don't want to think about it. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. Or the apathy that you get is really, it's soul crushing, honestly. They talk in the leftist social justice circles is that you talk about emotional labor. Like, that's the emotional labor, like the constantly day in and day out.
Yeah.
Justify your existence. And I think, like, one thing that, like, you know, we can do as white dudes is we can shoulder some of that emotional burden for like we can educate ourselves and be a part and listen to these conversations, and then instead of like minorities exhaustively on a one-to-one retail basis coming to their white friends and saying, listen mm-hmm. to me, I need you to hear this, like, we can help out with that. And
but it's
tough because what I've become aware of is it's very hard, like, once you attain the knowledge you need to, like, I guess, be enlightened, to then transmit that to others, because that's a process in itself. Like, it's you first,
sure.
like, you know, like, and we're 25 minutes into this comic book movie. I haven't got to the spoiler section. But, like, you know, a lot of people that are privileged don't like to hear the word privileged. And it's like an instant mm-hmm. barrier. It puts you on the defense because the language employed says that you have somehow got to some place that you didn't quite deserve, maybe, and you didn't quite ask for, but you're still benefiting it, and you should feel bad generically. And, like, it's so much more complicated and not like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what's the 101 version of that philosophy? What is the way that you can espouse that and teach people that without being kind of offensive and inflammatory? And it's a bitch because it's really hard. It's really hard to tell. There's a classic, a quote that, like, to a privileged person, equality feels like oppression.
Sure.
Like, say, like, you're the big kids on the playground and you haven't let the little kids play on the baseball diamond, and your mom comes out and says, damn it, you gotta let the little kids play. You get off the field and let them play three games in a row since you've been playing it. And then that's like, well, what the fuck? They don't even know what they're doing. Look, they're so pathetic. They don't even know how to play ball because, well, how are they going? I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I just used an illustration that essentially puts the minorities in a position of being children to the privileged people's adults. Like, it's very hard to find a non-problematic way that's not going to be, like, if you explain it to a level that privileged people understand, it almost comes off as demeaning and offensive to minorities. And if you come at it full, like, woke mode, it's, like, extremely hostile and defensive, provoking to the privileged class. So,
yeah.
You know, people ask me a lot, it's like, well, why haven't you, like, done this political podcast you've always talked about? Because it's fucking hard.
Yeah.
And I don't have an interest in doing something that is going to be preaching to the choir, and actually preaching to the people that need to be preached to is fucking hard and difficult.
I feel like these conversations are probably easier in a, like you said, retail basis, right? Like a one-on-one.
Yeah.
sort of thing. Because you can tailor your conversation to that person.
Yes.
For their level of understanding and engagement. But trying to do it in a podcast form, holy shit.
It's tough. Yeah. Do we have anything else we want to talk about non-spoilers? Should we get into the spoiler section?
Yeah, let's go spoilers. We've been talking long enough.
Okay. First up, trailers. Lots of trailers in this movie. First up was Uncle Drew, which I was prepared.
What? Did you get some fucking Florida trailers in?
No. Did you go to the theater? This is Cincinnati trailers. So this is a bunch of over-the-hill basketball stars like Shaquille O'Neal and Reggie Miller. And they're made up to look like they're a 65-year-old. And their idea is like there's legendary kind of like Dr. J type of basketball players coming out of I don't know what the setup is, but he is forming a dream team of these old people, and they're in this like Eddie Murphy old man makeup, and they're dunking, and I rolled my eyes at the concept, but honestly, there was solid joke after solid joke, visual gags, and it looks I think it looks pretty funny.
All right.
It got really big laughs from the audience I saw it with, so that seems kind of fun and cool. And that was completely off my radar until I saw the trailer for this movie. Game Night with Jason Bateman and the Notebook woman, who I really like, and I can't think
never
of her
seen
name.
Notebook.
You haven't seen it? Okay, but Mean Girls, the head queen bee from Mean Girls.
Lindsay Lohan?
No, that's, she's okay, yeah, you got it.
Rachel McAdams,
yeah. Thank you. This movie looks funny, too. The concept is there is some kind of like escape room slash game night that these married couples have set up, and they get mixed up with like a real, I guess, Russian mob kidnapping. And they're going along with it as if it's a game, but it's like suddenly Jason Bateman gets shot. And
yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
biting down on a squeaky toy. This is essentially the trailer two of this. Mm-hmm. And I thought it made it look better than the first one. Deadpool, the Bob Ross Deadpool trailer.
Oh, you got the Bob Ross one.
I got the Bob Ross. I've seen both of them, though.
Okay. I got the one where he's... I don't know who the
Cable with the action
chomping.
Figure.
Yeah, that one.
That's pretty good too. But the Bob Ross one, I think, is inspired.
Yeah, they've been killing it with the Deadpool trailers.
I worried about if they'd be able to follow up, because Deadpool is so original and kind of fresh. Yeah. Like, how do you do a second one that's that? But like, it seems like they know what they're doing.
That's a movie where you can turn your brain off and just enjoy it. And eat
there
your popcorn.
Is no politics in Deadpool.
No.
Tom Hardy is making a Venom movie. Do you know anything about this?
No.
This is like a preview trailer. It's like 30 seconds long, and essentially Tom Hardy is going to be Venom, which is Spider-Man's arch nemesis. Yeah. It's interesting that they would... I don't know that they've ever done this before, where they've introduced a villain in a standalone that presumably is going to be a big part of the Marvel world. But it's a cool way to like... I feel like it's the first signs of Disney's pivot away from the Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and Chris Pine. No, he's not one of them. Chris Hemsworth. It's a way for them to pivot away from the Marvel Phase 1 and like build out the young Spider-Man world. Mm-hmm. And now instead of like introducing like old like B and C and D list heroes, it's going to be about now really developing like the worlds of the heroes they're going to try to build around for whatever phase they're on now. So I'm kind of excited about that because I like Tom Hardy. His last role as a comic book villain was memorable. I'll see if he does well with Venom. Jurassic World 2.
It looks like another Jurassic World.
Did you see the trailer for Solo?
Yes.
What'd you think?
I've seen it. I am not really impressed with the guy playing Han.
I found myself more impressed with him.
Like,
he's got the Harrison Ford smarmy smile down pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, I don't. Hashtag not my Solo. Like, I don't know, man.
Here's what I don't understand. I think I've said this on a couple of Lunch with Jim and Aaron and stuff. I don't understand why they seem hell-bent on destroying all of the EU. Mm-hmm. Like, Han Solo has a perfectly cromulent backstory of how he and Chewbacca met and how he kind of became the roguish anti-hero that we grew to love in the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. And they are throwing that away in favor of something. like one last heist by Space Woody Harrelson, I'm already prejudiced against that idea. So on the other hand, Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian,
looking pretty good.
You know, the Drake putting his hands up and saying no to Solo, the Drake putting his hands up and pointing at Lando. Lando is the movie that I want to see.
Yeah.
Did you see Ant-Man and the Wasp?
Ant-Man and the Wasp. I don't know. I saw 100 different Marvel trailers.
So this is one of them.
One of which had Paul Rudd in it.
That's
but I didn't know if
Ant-Man.
It was that. Or,
so you didn't see the original
Ant-Man.
Or
if it was Infinity War. I don't know. I saw an Infinity War trailer, too.
Oh, see, I didn't see the Infinity, because I've seen that a million times. Did you see the original Ant-Man?
No.
It's a pretty good Marvel film.
I saw him in Captain America Civil War.
Yeah, where he grew super big, and that was the way they plussed that action scene. Ant-Man was solid. I really liked Ant-Man.
Oh, now he's got a sidekick, right?
He's got Evangeline Neon Genesis.
And she has better, cooler weapons,
she
apparently.
Does. She does, because he's, you know, Paul Rudd is kind of ne'er-do-well. He's a burglar.
Oh.
So, who is Mike?
His power fits his line of work pretty well.
Right. So Michael Douglas was skeptical about giving him the good stuff, apparently.
Yeah.
I think that looks like a fun film. I don't know if it's a first-run bald movie, because I am getting a little tired of the Marvel stuff. And it looks like we're going to get 6 to 8 movies till we die.
Yep.
So I feel like you got to pay some of this stuff. Did you get any other trailers that I didn't mention?
None that I remember, no.
If you are not a club member, this is where we part ways. We will be back next week for Annihilation. It's Annihilation,
Shania Twain's
right?
new documentary about her latest tour.
About her making of the song behind Thank You for Serving.
Oh, God.
It is Annihilation, right? Natalie Portman?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. We don't have anything on the schedule, like, officially...
I think that's one that we wanted to see, and it's next week.
Okay.
Are we seeing it?
Am I in town next week? What day is it?
It is. What's the date? It comes out on the 1st, so you will not.
I will not be in town.
No. Okay. Maybe Cecil and I will come and see it and give it a review, because I definitely want to see it.
Okay.
All right. Let us get into the spoiler edition.
All right. Spoiler time. Where do you want to start? Can we talk about the superhero that is Black Panther to start with?
Yeah.
He's basically a superpowered Batman, right? Like, if according to Wikipedia, here's the description of Black Panther.
Yep.
Because I didn't know much about Black Panther to begin with.
I still don't know a lot about his powers and abilities. He's super strong and super fast, and he has a bulletproof piece of armor.
That, in addition to... Okay, so Wikipedia says he relies on his proficiency in science, rigorous physical training, hand-to-hand combat skills, and access to wealth and advanced technology to combat his enemies. That sounds exactly like Batman.
Except
he's also superpowered.
I read that, like, one of the things about, like, Wakanda in Marvel was that all of its citizens, like, travel under assumed identities, and they go to, like, the best colleges and schools, and, like... T'Challa himself has a PhD in physics, and they're kind of like, you know, geniuses in their own right. And they kind of nodded to that with his sister, Shuri.
Yeah.
But, one of the frustrating things for me in this movie is Wakanda was so cool and kind of something that I've never seen before, and a concept like, you know, this Afrofuture, like, sovereign state. I wanted to know, like, every time... We did a flyover Wakanda, and you see these tall buildings. I'm like, what the hell is going on in there? Like, they don't really... There's limited trade with the outside world. So you've got this entirely closed economy of almost super futuristic technology. What are the schools like? What sports do they play? What are their accountants? Are there Wakandan lawyers that... like handle vibrant... I don't know. Like, all we saw was kind of like... the role of the sovereign, which is to essentially keep Wakanda safe and keep their traditions alive. Mm-hmm. It's also weird. It strikes me as weird that you've got this 23rd century African kingdom that is extremely high tech and sophisticated, not just scientifically, but culturally. It seems like they've got very high minded ideals that still resolves the transition of power through ritual combat.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of is it's just a cultural ritual. Like that's the whole thing about rituals, right?
They
often are holdovers from a time when that was your only solution to the problem.
It just seems weird that the politics of Wakanda are that don't seem advanced. And
and the problem with ritual combat as a choice for king is that it only tests your physical abilities.
Well, and so, right, and I feel like that
it doesn't in any way say I'm prepared to be king.
I feel like the movie, and I wish I could see this again. But I feel like the movie itself realizes that, because there's several points where his sister Shuri points out the ridiculousness of some of this pomp and circumstance. And then the central thing is a Killmonger comes into the kingdom and kicks T'Challa's ass and throws him off the waterfall. And now he's king.
Yep.
And there ain't shit any of their institutions can do to stop that.
Yeah.
But isn't that I think there's some sneaky allusions to that I haven't seen mentioned a lot, and I alluded to in a forum post that Wakanda is a technologically sophisticated, militarily superior country that has effectively walled itself off and become like this ethnostate.
Yeah.
And they reject they largely reject any kind of foreign policy or world involvement. They don't allow refugees in. It feels like Wakanda is what some percentage of the American population want to make America.
Yes.
We got ours. Yeah. Fuck everybody else. Make America like America first, make America great again. And it's a weird, the first half of the movie I felt like is toying with Wakanda is what parts of America want to be, and that is explicitly bad. And look at all of the things that T'Challa's girlfriend, I'm not sure what their relationship is, former girlfriend, once and future girlfriend, Nakia, she is saying there from the very beginning of the movie, this is bad, this is wrong, we should go out there and help the world. That's also the villain's main point. And I thought that was one of the interesting things about the movie, that if you, because this movie, we talked about its quote unquote importance in the beginning of the podcast, but because of that, there are all kinds of forces arrayed against the movie that are throwing shit at it and criticizing it. And a lot of the segments that we talked about in American culture that want to turn America into a white, secure, isolationist ethno state are criticizing Wakanda for that. There's a lot of other even less serious racist criticisms in the movie,
sure.
But that's the one that I cannot believe I'm seeing this coming out of some of these people's mouths. But I don't know, I felt like that's you might have read a lot more reviews than I, because I was dying to. There was so many, I could feel the hot takes throbbing from the internet over the weekend, and I couldn't touch them until tomorrow night or until Monday evening. And so I've done a lot of reading since then, but probably not as much as you. Have you seen any takes like that where they compare what Wakanda is to what America wants to be?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's,
I guess that's an obvious take. No.
It is. Yeah. I've seen the surface level stuff. I haven't seen a deep dive on that particular topic. Mostly because I don't know, I guess that was not the thing that interested me most. Mm-hmm. It was more about, I went in this looking for the black perspective, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I can talk about MAGA stuff all day.
Yeah, right.
That's well within my wheelhouse. But getting a different perspective on this was important to me.
Sure, sure.
So I did a lot of reading there.
The idea of how this is bound up in kind of themes of black liberation, I thought was really cool too, because there is, I alluded to this in the non-spoiler review, but there is a lot of black academia that was critical of this movie because they're saying it's an anti-revolutionary film, that every single time that
but it's so not.
I
disagree with that.
But I think it's an interesting viewpoint to have that, is this a film where you've got a hero saying, we have the means, we have the weaponry, we can rise up and end all this now? And it is a little interesting that you've got this fictional nation of Wakanda, where the freest black people in the ever lived are walking, And the climax of the movie is a civil war between them essentially trying to keep this technology from being distributed out amongst the world to destroy imperialism and to kill Whitey.
Yeah.
And they fight a civil war amongst themselves to on our behalf, which is essentially, that's why I said it's an X-Men theme. Like, every time the mutants go against Magneto, they're doing with the explicit goal of saving a race of beings expressed hatred or indifference towards them.
But I feel like that's shifting the focus back to white people here. The focus here is on the black people and how they solve their own disputes, right?
Yeah.
Like, the black community is very divided in those different camps and different forms, those different opinions on how to resolve this thing. So, like, here's what it is. It's anti-violent revolution.
Yes.
I will say that.
Yes.
Because the movie very much comes down in the revolutionary camp. Like, at the end, T'Challa takes the technology and stuff that they have developed, and he's going to disperse it to the world. He's going to break the isolationist views that they've had for so long. That is a revolution.
Right.
That is a huge revolution. It's just not violent.
Yeah. No, yeah. No, then that's the thing. Like, to me, the movie felt very aspirational that way, like you could, and again, just like the X-Men, like, yes, you can use your gifts and your powers to do what was done to you. Like, but that's the opposite of crazy. That's still crazy.
Yeah. And
a lot of times I ponder, like, what if Africa had been the ascendant power in the world and, like, essentially black people were running the world?
Mm-hmm.
Would the world be a more righteous place? I doubt it. Because
they're still human beings.
Because they're human beings, and when you have an advantage over another tribe or nation or people that have things you want, you tend to use your strength and might to dominate. We just have the world would be a different, like, it'd be an unquestionably different place culturally and all that, but, like, as far as the evils in the world, I don't necessarily think that if the Asians were running things, or black people running things, or Native Americans were running things, that it would be better. Like, we would still be going through a struggle for representation, because what we need to happen is to get everybody equally represented around the table, which is the planet Earth, so that everyone can realize that this isn't easy, and everyone can have their say, and we can all work on solutions together.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, there's going to be a lot of struggle and fighting and fussing and feuding to get to that point, because, you know, like, there's a lot of killmongers out there that, like, want to repay violence and oppression with violence and oppression.
Sure.
And that,
and I understand the feeling.
Yeah.
I understand that tendency.
If you cheered when the aliens get blown up in Independence Day, then you already understand why those feelings exist.
Right. Now, here's the thing. So you said that you thought T'Challa was a great character. I think he's one of the weak is the wrong word. One of the most boring characters in this entire movie.
Uh-huh.
I think literally everybody around him is far more interesting and engaging.
Hmm.
And I don't know if it's the actor not, like, bringing what it needs, or if it's the movie just not having the characterization that it needs. But yes, he's a strong leader, but he's like a strong, silent type with these isolationist tendencies, who by the end is changed by all of the much better characters around him essentially painting on his blank canvas. Like,
but so I think that's one of the keys to why I like him, because, like,
right,
if you,
he's King Solomon, right? He's the guy who is taking in all of the views and then pronouncing the judgment.
He represents all these masculine ideals of being the perfect warrior, and yet he also listens to the council. Like, the other, like, I guess, leg of Afrofuturism, you've got, like, alienation, reclamation, and explicit feminism.
Sure.
That, like, you know, because as hard as, like, the generic African diaspora has had it, like, African women have had it even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, in empowering them and treating them as equals is one of the explicit goals of that movement. And I felt like that this movie, I mean, Black Panther is like a very Afrofuturistic archetype in that regard, because the women are the warrior caste, and he's got his, like, his father is already dead by the time he leans on his mother, leans on his sister, he leans on his general, played by Danai Gurira, which I'm so happy to see her in something that she's probably proud of being
and
in.
And she's so fucking good in
she's
this,
so
too.
She's so good. Like, that, like, all of her shit in the nightclub scene, yeah, which was already really cool and James Bondy and, like this foreign location, and they're in this nightclub, and it's, like, just a really cool... And then she whips out her spear and starts kicking ass. Like, it and her whole standoff with her lover and the rhino,
yeah,
which, like... It's cast this fucking vibranium-clad rhino as the family dog who's just gonna... I was so happy. I was so happy because, like, she is one of the best parts of The Walking Dead, but The Walking Dead's a big pile of rhino shit.
Yeah.
So, like, to see her emerge from that and something that's like in 15 years, people are just gonna still feel like it was worth doing, I thought was pretty awesome. But that's why I think T'Challa is so cool, is because he is not a one-man army that can do everything by himself. He needs his people. His people have a diverse set of opinions and experiences and viewpoints, and he listens to all that and molds it and develops this third way of diplomacy and outreach and embracing of refugees, which I think is a really good role model that a lot of young men need.
He's
honestly
just so boring. He's just, he doesn't have the good lines. He doesn't have the good jokes.
He doesn't even have the best costume. Michael B. Jordan's fucking Black Panther costume blows the shit out of his. Yeah. Like, that fucking...
Well, he wanted the lightweight version.
That's true.
He couldn't...
That's true.
He can't pack as much cool gear into that.
But, like the gold spots and the... And I just felt like the... Yeah, Michael B. Jordan's character was certainly... Seemed like he was cooler and more colorful.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, Shuri's better, Okoye's better, like all of the characters around T'Challa are better than T'Challa, in my opinion.
But he's also,
you need him there at the center, I agree.
But also, he's a king that's not quite ready to be king, which is another theme to him.
The reluctant hero, sure.
So, I don't know, maybe he's coasting by on the charisma from Captain America 3, but I thought he was a... in terms of him being a hero, he's fine. But I think in like a role model for how people should treat each other and how your politicians should behave towards new information and how like bold, like, I guess his plan is, because he's going against thousands of years essentially of isolationism.
Mm-hmm.
And like the way that I don't know. I really like the point. I really like the contrast between when, like, T'Challa visits the ancestral plane and when Eric Killmonger visits the ancestral plane. Like, you know, T'Challa goes and he's like, he's on the Serengeti or whatever hell it's supposed to be. And there's like all the Black Panthers on this big tree and it's all beautiful and amazing. And Eric goes back and he's in that shitty apartment that his dad was in when he was a covert Wakandian spy. And like the line, like, T'Challa and his father T'Chaka, I find it very easy to cry and find comfort in each other's eyes and each other's arms. Whereas like Eric, when he goes to visit his father, and I loved how they cast him back as like a young boy, and his father's like, "What? Do you have no tears for me?" And he's like, "I've grown up in this neighborhood and I've seen all my friends die and you die, and like it's just the way things are." I don't know. I thought those were really beautiful contrasts. Plus, I'm in the tank for Michael B. Jordan since he was Wallace on The Wire.
Right.
So,
yeah. Oh, that's the thing. There are a lot of people that I recognize from Black Mirror in this. So, like,
yeah,
Letitia Wright was in the Black Museum episode of Black Mirror very recently.
Yep.
And then Daniel Kaluuya was in 15 Million Merits, which is...
Yes,
co-starring one of my favorites.
He also is. I know you haven't. I know you. All right. I know you haven't seen it yet, but he's also the star of Get Out.
Yes. Yeah. Which is what far more people know him for now.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought he was really good as like what I thought the Wakabi was really good. The Daniel Kaluuya character. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought the Winston Duke, which I feel like I've seen this guy in something, but I looked at his filmography and I didn't see he played. M'Baku,
oh yeah,
the leader of the mountain tribe that have the, I guess, the gorilla god that they worship. I thought he kind of stole the show in every scene he was in.
Yep, he was good.
The other thing is, what are they going to do with the Black Panther now that he no longer has his herb? Like,
he Wait, he ate it, though.
Right? Yeah, but, like, he going to be the last Black Panther?
I guess so.
Are they going to rediscover the heart-shaped herb? What?
Maybe.
Like, I thought that was one of the clues where, that's where, like, I think I broke ways with Michael B. Jordan and, like, okay, you're a villain when... Because it's clear to me that he wanted to be the emperor.
It's consolidation of power.
And he didn't care about Wakanda and protecting Wakanda, because if he did, he wouldn't burn the heart-shaped garden down to the ground. He wanted to be the main guy that no one could come behind afterwards. And I don't know. I almost was hoping that the climax of the film would be no one eats the heart-shaped herb. They're going to use it to replant the garden, and the Black Panther would have to find a way to kick... Michael B. Jordan's ass unpowered.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought they were going towards that with, like, as soon as they revealed the train station could, like, depower vibranium, I'm like, oh, there's going to be a staged fight in there, and it's going to be against, they're not going to have superpowers, and it's just going to be man versus man.
I almost feel like that would have been better. Because, like, I...
On the other hand, we already saw that, and Killmonger kicked his ass, so...
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. It's here are my problems with the plot. Like, it's all just the magical hand wavy bullshit that I hate about fantasy.
Yeah.
And hate about superhero stories.
Yeah.
Because, like, can a character come back from the dead? Sure, a character can come back from the dead. They got a magic flower that does it. What can vibranium do? Any fucking thing you want it to do.
It literally can
make Captain America's shield. It can make this suit. It can shoot power. It can power a super weapon.
It can heal your spinal cord damage.
You get fucked. Like, I don't. Yeah. None of this stuff makes any sense. It's not interesting. It's not consistent throughout the story. Like,
yeah, and I've heard this bullshit so much from you that I can't even enjoy superhero fights anymore, because there's this one point where, like, this army of spear wielding warriors that vibranium swords, they come running up and they corner Black Panther and they just start stabbing and beating the shit out of him.
Mm-hmm. But his suit protects him,
like,
completely.
There's 30 guys wailing the fuck out of him, and it's like Neo in the Burly fight with the Agent Smith. Like, he just eventually is like, oh, I'm just gonna take all this energy and blah. There was a lot of lack of tension in that Civil War scene, because it didn't seem like anyone could beat anybody else.
No, I mean, the people who, I guess the people who die in that, if anybody dies, but Michael Jordan might be the only guy who dies in this movie.
Right. And I like the I like the shields. Like, that was really cool technology. But Black Panthers fucking jumped over it. And I like the vibranium rhinos. Like, the movie kept escalating appropriately. But because of the almost... I don't know. You need another 45 minutes of world building, which would have been way too much to explain, like, how all this technology works. But for one of the first times in a long time, I really felt the voice of Jim Jones in the back of my mind, where, like, all this purple metal bullshit, like, what
is
it?
It's all just that. It's
bullshit. What does it mean? Like, what does it mean?
Yeah. It can be anything at any time that they need it to be, and therefore it's not important.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the problems I have, and why the plot is just kind of samey to me outside of its, like, grander context.
Right.
I mean, ultimately, it all comes together.
What'd you think of Andy Serkis doing motion capture for the most realistic Andy Serkis CGI I've ever seen?
That was actually a puppet. I don't know if Andy Serkis climbed into an Andy Serkis puppet.
I would believe it, because I did not know that Andy Serkis is jacked out of his mind.
No, I didn't know that either.
He is fucking solid and beefy. I fully believe that he climbed into an Andy Serkis suit.
Yeah. It was crazy.
When did that happen?
Is that the first time that he's been on screen as himself?
Since, like, King Kong, maybe?
With his own face?
I think since, like the last time I can remember is he was the cook in King Kong that got his head eaten by a larva.
Okay.
Of some form.
But this is, like, a major role.
Yeah. The last time I've seen his fucking full body was in the behind the scenes stuff of Lord of the Rings, and he was not Gollum-y, but certainly certainly not ripped and shredded like a bowl of wheat.
Yeah.
I liked him. That's the other bummer that I have, is that there's two really good villains in here, and they killed them both. Like, I was, and I know you didn't stay for the final scenes.
No, I watched, or I read a description of them later.
But one of them at the end is Black Panther's sister, like, furthering the healing of Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame that they can take one soldier who's been like brainwashed and put through so much trauma and abuse that he's a violent psychopath, and they can rehabilitate him in Wakanda, but Killmonger, they can, I understand the point they were making with, like, you know, bury me at the sea with my brothers and sisters who realize jumping off the boat's better than living in. Yeah, no, that's some fucking real shit.
Yeah.
But by the way, if you want more of that, watch the first couple episodes of American Gods. I'm like maybe Black Panther should have yeah, that's fine, but I'm still shoving this vibranium pelt inside you, and we're still going to try to rehabilitate you because. Mm. You've got a lot of passion and pride and things that we could redirect. And I don't know. It's like, I don't think he was a mad dog to be put down. It's a damn shame they couldn't find, like fucking Magneto gets in prison, in his plastic prison, to keep around, because he's a great villain. And I think it would be interesting to see a series of Black Panther films where maybe by the third one they've rehabilitated like Killmonger and Bucky, and maybe they'd even. Like, that's a great hook, too. Like, put them in the same hut and have them talk shit out. Like, yeah, I was, like, fucking brainwashed and used as a pawn and had a lot of bad shit happen to me. And, like
group therapy for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the Black Panther 3, he's fighting side by side with T'Challa. Or maybe T'Challa gets waylaid and he has to be, like, the backup Black Panther. It's bad when, like, he's such a great fucking villain to just wad him up and throw him away, and Andy Serkis to a lesser extent. I was sad and disappointed by.
Yeah. A couple of scenes that I really liked. I like the car chase scene a lot.
I thought it was too long and wasn't as good as the Captain America one.
I don't remember the Captain America one.
What's cool with that is, like, it's very hard to convincingly show human beings running at like 60 miles an hour, because mostly people visualize it as like either super slow motion, like $6 Million Man, or they do it like where it's like just super sped up.
Yeah.
And both kind of look ridiculous, whereas Captain America and Black Panther were just taking like 50-foot strides.
Yeah.
And it looked, and like, it was very, like, just watching Black Panther and the Captain chase down an SUV on foot was fucking cool in a way that, you know, Black Panther and Danai Gurira, like, ghost riding the whip was not as cool.
I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it had a really a pretty good joke ending.
Yeah, the visual gag of his lover getting blown, like just arriving in
sliding
a seat.
Up in the seat. Yeah,
yeah, it was really good. I like that a lot.
And then my other favorite moment is when Danai throws that wig during the fight scene.
Yeah, and she's bitching about it the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is that a dig at Michonne? Because obviously she wears a crazy wig in Walking Dead 24/7.
I don't know.
I really like the nightclub scene. I like that. I did not like the car chase as much. In fact, that's the point in the movie where I was starting to get worried. Like, oh man, I'm not looking forward to giving a lukewarm review of Black Panther because of how great everyone else is liking the movie. But fortunately, Killmonger showed up literally the scene afterwards and like fucking kicked the movie into a whole other gear. But no, I like that. I liked, and there's a lot of really cool storytelling touches, like the Black Panther sparing his rival M'Baka and say, because his people, like, your people will need you, like yield, man, your people need their leader, and he yields. And before the movie's over, it's not his people that need him, but the people of Wakanda needs him and his people. And the fact that, like, he rejects the offer to be the next Black Panther, something that he fought for in the end because he has got such respect for the traditions and his nation of Wakanda, I thought that was really cool. And, like, elevated him above the, the false antagonist, the pseudo antagonist, the one you think is going to be the problem. Because they build him up since the beginning of the movie. To be like, oh, there's this mountain tribe that's like pissed off at the greater Wakanda, and they're up in the mountains casting aspersions and are jealous and all this. And nah, that all ends up being like a theme of unity by the end.
Yeah. It's good. I don't know. I I really do like the final line from Killmonger. I know we briefly touched on it, but yeah. I think it's worth talking about some more because of just how packed with feeling that line is. There's obviously like the modern day, the real world allegory there, but I think also it's within the movie it works really well because he's like at the beginning of the movie his father's telling him about the sunset, this Wakanda sunset, and how he was going to show it to him and how it's so beautiful, and the sunset is sort of representative of the thing that Killmonger wants, right, like of his people being ascendant.
Right, and safe and secure.
Right, and he sees that at the end, but he's dying, and he knows he can't show it to his other people.
Uh-huh.
And it's super sad. I don't know.
Yeah, no. But that's the thing that, like, again, I think... Because it seemed to me that T'Challa...
And he did what he could to make it a reality for him. Like, that's the thing. He's working toward a noble goal, just maybe in the wrong way.
And, like, T'Challa says to his father, like, you were wrong to leave this boy and abandon him here to protect, like, whatever you were trying to protect. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it is sad. But on the other hand, like, I feel like my read on T'Challa was that he was going to keep up largely his family's traditions of isolationist and fulfill that policy of Wakanda first. And his interactions with Killmonger, I mean, it wasn't just Nakia that convinced him. It was his interactions with Killmonger and his going out into the world and seeing, how the other side are living. So that's the hero's journey. You start in for a place of comfort, you get out of your comfort zone, you acquire new knowledge and new skills, you pay a heavy price, and you come through a changed person. And his address at the UN, where he talks about the change in policy, his Wakandan outreach program that he's going to start in Oakland, like those are all, and they don't really like, what I really liked about it is it's played a lot, it reminded me a lot of those scenes of the first Iron Man, where, like, the exciting thing about that was you thought that Tony Stark was going to maintain a secret identity and it was going to be a conventional superhero film. But then at the end, he drops the, like, nah, fuck it, I'm Iron Man.
Yeah.
And it's like, but this is what's cool about this is, like, they play it the same thing where, this like there's a skeptic voice from the UN saying, like, well, what can a nation of farmers and textile merchants offer the world? And, like, there's no response. It's just the Black Panther smiling. Like, you have no fucking idea.
Right. And I think so. The movie, in my mind, tries to find essentially a middle path, you know, between the isolationist tendencies that T'Challa has at the beginning and the violent revolution tendencies that Killmonger has. Right. And it says there is a way to accomplish both goals. To both, there's a pattern of, like, defense and education and outreach that will get us to the goal we're looking for without the violence.
And that's another thing I found politically aspirational, because the frustration I see is how willing our political leaders are to ignore trends and kick the ball forward until it's literally almost too late.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to desperately save off these societal changes. And Wakanda was in that position because there's a point in earlier in the film where they're talking about, like, the rest of the world is going, like, because of this alien technology infusion and, like, the Infinity Stones have been dumped on Earth and also, like humanity and Tony Stark, humanity is catching up. Like, we have another, 100 years where we have this massive advantage, and then what? It's actually really shows forethought that Wakanda is like, okay, we can ride this out until it's too late, and then what? And then our fate is out of our hands, and what the hell is going to happen? Or we can take the bold, brave step to try to start, like he says, building these bridges instead of building these walls.
Yeah.
And that's uncertain, and it's there's a lot of fear involved, but we are in a position of strength. And why are we so goddamn afraid of the fucking rest of the world when we are the strongest nation in the goddamn world?
Yeah.
Like, it's refreshing to see someone actually be like, you know what, we're strong enough to take the occasional hit, and this is going to be painful, and it's going to jeopardize our absolute safety and comfort in the short term, but the long-term goal is worth fighting for. And I thought that was not necessarily a black political point. That's a political point that I wished a lot of the world leaders, especially here in America, would espouse.
Yeah. I mean, to hold those isolationist views is to say I don't care about anyone else.
Right.
And fortunately, at the end of this movie, those are overthrown in favor of caring.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, I feel like the primary struggle the human race is going for now is to stop seeing things along lines of borders and political alliances and cultural and tribal things, but start seeing, like, these are planetary concerns that we have. And, like, I can't remember which astronaut, but one of the ones that went to the moon, he talked about the famous blue marble, and he goes, I wish I could drag every politician out to the moon and point to the Earth and say, look at that, you son of a bitch. Yeah. Show me the borders. Show me where our land ends and their other lands. And they all describe this as like a profoundly transformative experience to see the whole of the globe, everyone that's ever lived and died right there. Mm-hmm. Like I said, there's a lot of those kind of chills that I got in this film, because it's like you can start to see like the interesting parts of science fiction now is not how many wars we can get into with people with bumpy foreheads. It's like, how can we all come together and do truly incredible things? Like, as incredible of the advancements that we've had as a species have been thus far, like what if the best and brightest of everyone, regardless of where you're born, regardless of what sex you have at birth, regardless of color of skin, what if the best and brightest are allowed to contribute to fullest capacity in society? Mm-hmm. Would that make what had the gains we've had since internet and automation look like a firecracker compared to atomic bomb? Like, I don't know, but it stands to reason. Unless you literally think the only smart people that are born are in, you know, Western countries.
Right.
Which, that's an interesting thesis, though I think would be hard to defend, given what we already know about scientists and scholars and, you know, physical specimens around the world.
Yeah. And that's where, I guess the last thing I want to say on Black Panther is that's where this movie is important. That's why it's more than just a superhero movie, because it has, in my mind, the ability to shift people's perspective. Much like you said with the blue marble, taking somebody to the moon and showing them the entirety of the Earth, we can get a different perspective as, you know, the privileged class by watching this movie and reading what people who are not as privileged as us have to say about it.
Yeah.
So I would encourage everybody to do that. Go out and don't participate in the conversation, but take in the conversation that's happening, because it's an important moment. Even if, like, a lot of people are saying, oh, this is going to change everything. I don't think it's going to change everything. It's not an overnight kind of thing, but it is an important moment. So I don't know. Get a different perspective on it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm very much looking forward to going around and reading a lot of articles of people that I already know are going to be writing them and seeing these perspectives, because you're right. I don't think this is transformational alone, but it can't hurt. It can't hurt to have, you know, people that feel rightfully like Eric, like the Killmonger character, to see those, like, in a mainstream American film that has millions of dollars behind it and has millions of dollars ahead of it, to see those things, like, acknowledged and, you know, not even explicitly criticized or say, well, that's ridiculous, you don't have a point, that's a sympathetic viewpoint. I think that's really important, and it's also really important for us not to lose our shit when we are confronted with things like, you know, what if we lived in a world where we weren't at the top of the political and social and scientific food chain? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's like I said, that's what is science fiction for, if not for that?
Sure.
If not to ponder what if and to get new insights on us as a species and our condition, by not pretending that things are different from the way they are. So, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Nope.
Okay. Again, we will be back next week for some form of coverage of Annihilation. And then I don't know what is the March slate, but I know we have one. I'll be talking about that, during our Annihilation review. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.